It's time for the Outspoken Cyclist, your weekly conversation about bicycles, cyclists, trails, travel, advocacy, the bike industry, and much, much more. You can subscribe to our weekly podcast at OutspokenCyclist.com or through your favorite podcatching app to listen anytime. Now here's your host, Diane Jenks.
Hello and welcome to the Outspoken Cyclist. I'm your host, Diane Jenks, and this is our show for January 29th, 2022. It's only a couple of days late, but it was a weekend. Anyway, great conversations today, so I hope you'll agree it was worth the extra few days' wait. My first guest is a frame builder. Surprise! No, not surprise, except he lives in Amsterdam, and his shop is in a really cool building right on the port. Lester Jansen started out as a bike messenger many years ago, and then learned that there were such things as custom bikes, right there in Amsterdam. He never looked back. We'll talk with Lester in a moment. Then, after our break, we're going to the Endless Mountain Heritage Region of Pennsylvania. I knew about the Endless Mountains because my sister lived there for a short time many years ago. What I didn't know is how rife the area is with riding options, from bike packing, there's a new 400-mile trail opening soon, to triathlons. There are four planned for 2022 in the four-county area known as EMHR, and it might just be your next cycling destination. We'll speak with Kane Chamberlain, the executive director, and Donna Iannone, a board member and county commissioner, in the second half of the show. Lester Jansen builds fillet-brazed custom steel bikes, beautifully crafted, one-off. Starting with a file and hacksaw and studying with the finest frame builders in Amsterdam, Lester struck out on his own in 2016, armed with knowledge, skills, vision, and a whole slew of new tools. Let's head on over to Amsterdam and give it a listen. Hello, Lester. Welcome to the Outspoken Cyclist. Thanks for joining me today. How are you?
Hi, Diane. Yeah, I'm doing well. Thank you. Thanks for asking. How are you?
I'm good. Thank you. Thanks for asking here. It's just cold and snowy and it's winter. So I guess it is what it is. So I know that most of my listeners have either been to Amsterdam or would want to go to Amsterdam. Let's talk about Lester Cycles, you and your background. Take us through from your first job in the bicycle business to owning your own frame building shop, which is what you do now.
Yeah. I always was cycling a lot. Of course, Amsterdam is one of the biggest cycling cities in the world, I think. Like you own a bike from kid on and you move around to the city. And at some point, I became a bike messenger as a side job. Just thought that it was amazing that you could make money with cycling. And it was very nice because you'll be out on the street the whole day. You had your own agenda, sort of. You could pick up jobs or not pick up jobs if you want. And yeah, I really liked that. And first I worked for a small company, a bike messenger company, and then I worked for another one. And the owner of the second one I worked for, it's called Infinity. He used to own a couple of frames that were made in Amsterdam. They were really beautifully made, and they had the weapon of Amsterdam as a head badge, like a shield with three crosses. And the other one said, like, handmade in Amsterdam on the down tube. So I was like, wow, it's possible to get a bike made in your own city. I didn't even know, never thought of that frame building existed. And so I started digging into it a little bit, and I figured out that Amsterdam used to have a lot of frame builders back in the days. Like the cycling used to be very big, bigger, even bigger than soccer is in Europe. And I think like in the 30s, 40s, 50s, every Sunday there were like 20,000 people in the stadium in Amsterdam looking at track cycling. Every neighborhood had their own frame builders for all the people that wanted to race. And the more I dug into it, I found that it was also a battle. If you would live in a certain street, you cannot have a bike built by a certain frame builder. You have to have it from that area. It's almost like like gangs or something. So I got really, really intrigued by it. I was like, wow, it's much bigger world than I knew. And so I started looking for old frame builders if they still exist. And some of the shops, they still existed, but they were not making frames anymore themselves. And one of the shops was still there. It was, so I knocked on the door, and it was like the older man in his late 70s, and he was the last one that still made frames by hand in Amsterdam. After a couple of months harassing him and asking if I could work for him, and he was very angry, and he was like always like, no, I don't want to have anything to do with this, and please leave the shop now. And it was just but at some point he took me under his wing and slowly taught me some frame building basics. It felt like a Japanese apprenticeship. I had to like sweep the floors and make coffee. When he would like hit the floor with his heel, I had to make coffee, and I couldn't name him by his first name. I had to call him sir. But it was fun. It was a really cool understanding we had.
How long ago was that?
It started in 2008, and it was very slow in the beginning. It took a couple of years before I was actually really helping him braze frames.
Oh, he was brazing. So he was doing lug work or TIG work?
Yeah, he did only TIG lugged frames. The brand is called Riesport Amsterdam, R-I-H. It's quite a famous Dutch cycling brand. They had like 63 gold medals on Olympic Games and World Championships. And
that's impressive.
Yeah, it had a rich history. They started in 1921. He was the third generation builder. That was amazing. This place had so much history. Like the whole shop was covered in photos of champions, and everywhere were like beautiful track bikes hanging on the ceiling. And yeah, it just really was institute for cycling in Amsterdam.
Let's take a moment to reintroduce you. We're speaking with Lester Jansen of Lester Cycles in Amsterdam, which is really cool. Everybody wants to go to Amsterdam eventually to ride, but I like the idea of building frames.
Have you ever been to Amsterdam?
I have. It's been many, many, many years. I mean, many decades before you were born, probably. Yeah. I was there as an 18-year-old for a university tour at the end of my sophomore year of college. And I was in Europe for 8 weeks, and Amsterdam was one of our stops. What a cool city even then. And this is back in the 60s, so long time ago.
Yeah. Well,
let's talk about your location. It's really cool. It's actually in the port of Amsterdam. And I assume that the port still is a port. Are there other artisans in your area, like other frame builders or people who are doing other kinds of artistic things?
In my building, yeah, for sure. It's a interesting part of the city because it's right on the edge of the port, and so the closest to the city. And the building I am staying in, it was empty in the 80s, in the early 80s. And there was like a fire in the building. So the owner had to take it down. And two young guys, they were like early 20s at the Art Academy, they decided to squat it. And the owner of the building was really happy because he actually had to pay a lot of money to take it down. So he sold it to them for 1 euro, or like one guilder. That's like 50 euro cents, basically less than a dollar. And so they got the ownership of the building, and they made a plan to do like to make a place for artists and craftsmen and artisans to grow and have a chance to have a good working space in the city without having to pay a lot of money, because we don't have a mortgage on the building, because the building is ours, because we bought it. And it's huge. It's like 20,000 square meters, 80 artists and artisans in there. So there's like a frame maker that makes like art frames. There's a guy that does restoration for furniture on museum level. There's a bunch of painters. There's a bunch of sculptures. There's we have a theater. We have a good restaurant. All kinds of stuff going on.
So it's a destination.
Not really. What do you mean a destination?
So people come to go through the different studios? Can people come and visit?
Actually, we don't do that enough, I think. There's like open days once a year, but it's funny. It's actually a good question. We talk about this quite a lot in the building, but we don't do enough like this. We should organize more of these things.
So I know there's this artist's building in on the other side of town, and every third Friday it's open for people to come in and go through the different studios and see what the art is. But it's basically artists, you know, painters and sculptors and weavers and whatever else goes on there. So I get that. I think it's really cool to open it up to the public.
Yeah.
Let's talk about your bikes. There is an idea. What kinds of bikes are you building right now? What are people ordering?
Well, basically I make anything that anybody wants. I can make mountain bikes. I can make road bikes, mountain bikes, road bikes, track bikes, whatever people want. But I don't know. I think it's the same in the States. There's like a big hype on fat tire road bikes, gravel bikes. That's what everybody wants. Although we don't really have a lot of gravel here in Holland, everything is quite flat. So I'm building a lot of big tire road bikes with disc brakes. Not really big tires, but I mean, like, you could fit 35 millimeters in a road bike with disc brakes.
We can talk about disc brakes. Not my favorite, but I guess I'm going to have to come back into the 21st century or 22nd century, and I'm going to have to get into it.
It's funny. Still, sometimes people order bikes with caliper brakes, and I love to build them. It took me years to get used to the disc brake stuff, especially because I was schooled very old school by this Resport guy.
Right.
He didn't even build treadless steerers. He only wanted to have like
one inch
threaded headsets in his bikes.
So you couldn't find the headsets and you couldn't find the stems. That became a problem.
Yeah.
So are you TIG welding or brazing frames? You were taught brazing, but I saw that most of your frames look like they're TIG welded.
No.
They're fillet?
Fillet brazed, yeah.
Yeah. Okay.
I'm a decent TIG welder, but I do some TIG welding to make. Sometimes I make looks with TIG welding. I make looks from pieces of tube if I need a special look in a certain place. Most is fillet braced, but I also build lug frames sometimes. But I never build a full frame TIG welded. I don't know why, but I just think it lacks a little bit of energy for me, at least, to build it. I don't know. I think brazing is just the torch and the way that you, the energy of building it. It's very nice for me as a builder to work like that. Filing down fillets is a bit less nice for my fingers.
Yeah, I get it. I know my husband makes his own lugs when he needs them, you know, depending on the geometry. Sometimes you have to make your own lugs. So are you building your own forks?
Yeah. Yeah. Also, not as much as I want. It's we'll come back to that later. But I do build my own forks if people want it. But sadly, most people won't have carbon forks in their bikes. It's just the way the market is right now, I think.
So it's interesting that if people rode a full steel frame with a steel fork, they would understand that feedback from the road that is so different from adding carbon. You know, it's just a different feel. How about painting? Your bikes are very pretty. Are you painting them? It looks like wet paint.
Yeah, it is wet paint. No. I mean, I wish I could paint them myself, but it's very difficult to get a license in the city.
Oh.
Banning these type of industries for a long, long time already. So everything with chemicals, it's just impossible to get it done in the city. And I mean, basically on the side of the center of the city. So you would have to move to an industrial area to do the painting. It still is a dream of mine to do it myself, to do like the whole process in-house. But now a friend of mine paints them, and he's a really good car painter. He does sheet work and custom car paint, and he understands the quality really well. It's my Achilles heel has always been the painting, because I have to give it out of hand to somebody else, and
right. It
took me many, many years to find a good painter that really knows how to put and the extra skin in the game to make it that
extra level, because I can file as much as I want and make the frame as nice as I can, but if the paint is shit, the whole bike will be shit for the customer.
People don't understand how difficult it is to paint bicycles. They think, oh, it must be easy, but painting a car is easy. Painting a bicycle is hard, and getting the paint to lay correctly. I agree.
And then the funny thing is that if you have a scratch in your car door and it's like 500 euros to repair, nobody's saying like, huh, 500 euros? That's a lot of money. No, it's like normal. But when you say that painting a bike is 500 euros, they're like, what?
And that's what it costs. Yeah, we've got some really high-end painters here in the States. And you know what? They charge what they charge. That's what it costs. So yeah. How have things changed for you since COVID, if at all?
Yeah, no. Well, the workload got a lot higher. There's a lot of people that started cycling because we had a couple of lockdowns. And one of the only things that you were allowed to do was cycling as a sport. So all the gyms closed down. It didn't affect me directly because most of the people at that point, they would buy like a cheap bike or secondhand bike just to start cycling. But after a while, after the first summer, when people didn't leave the country, they all had extra money and they started buying bikes. So I had quite a lot of orders in the first year of COVID, and I still had a lot of stock. But now, the second year, the stock problem started becoming a problem for me, because both the tube manufacturers, I don't know if you guys got any light of the Brexit situation where England left the European Union.
Oh yeah, I was just talking to somebody about that last week. Yeah.
Yeah, the thing is that one of the big distributors for bike tubing and bike frame building parts is in England. That was my main source where I would buy all my stuff. And with the Brexit last year, they stepped out of the European Union, which gave the problem that you would have to pay double tax and every shipment needs extra forms. So it just became ridiculously expensive, and everybody started hoarding right before that. So they also got a big backlog of orders that they couldn't fill. And yeah, it was very difficult to get the right stuff at the right moment.
What kind of tubing were you using mainly?
Mainly Columbus. And yeah, also Reynolds sometimes.
You couldn't get Columbus direct from Italy.
Yes, that's possible. Although they also just stopped selling to small builders directly.
Really?
They own companies nowadays. So if I do orders there, it has to be really big orders in Italy. It's possible, but I invest thousands and thousands of euros to do a order then. So it's a bit of a hassle at the moment, but I'm trying to fight through it. But yeah, and the forks are a big problem. Like carbon forks are super hard to get by right now. I work a lot with Envy. They still are pretty okay, but also Whiskey Components is an American component maker.
Quality bike, and, yeah.
Yeah, quality bicycle products, and they don't have a back ordering system. So every time when forks arrive, I get an email, but it's in USA time. So when I'm sleeping, the email gets there like, oh, your forks are here, the ones that you wanted. And then the next morning I wake up and I look.
And they're gone.
So I've had a bit of an issue with this stuff, but it also gave me a new idea actually, this situation, because I started thinking about what do I want to do. Do I want to continue struggling with this shortage, or should I just change it myself? And I was thinking of stopping building full custom bikes and started making small production runs of bikes, and then doing full like semi-custom with custom stems, custom seat posts, all steel. There's also steel forks, and then that would save me a lot of trouble, because I could do all the work for beforehand, and I don't have any backlog. I could just invest and make it and then sell it. And So that's what I'm now slowly working towards. I stopped taking custom orders, and I'm slowly working on a plan to do like small production runs, because my workshop is fully capable of doing production runs. I have all the machines ready to go.
Let's take a short break. And when we come back, we're going to talk a little bit about custom, but I want to pursue this idea of these small production runs. We're speaking with Lester Jansen. He's in Amsterdam, Lester Cycles. We'll be right back. You're listening to The Outspoken Cyclist. We are back on The Outspoken Cyclist. My guest is Lester Jansen from Jansen Cycles in Amsterdam, Netherlands. So we were talking about this idea that there's such a shortage of components, tubing, fork blades, everything that you would need, and forks to build custom bikes, that you're thinking about actually doing production runs. So are you going to take existing geometries? Is that what you're thinking? Like you'd make a series of 54s, 57s, 59s, something like that, and then just have frames built and then painted to order?
Yeah, what I was thinking of first doing a couple of tryouts with this, making like a small production run, a couple of sizes, and then finish one, just maybe come up with a really nice paint job, a special paint job for every season or something.
Oh, cool.
And then wait with all the brays on, so people could still choose if they want to have like electronic shifting or internal cables and stuff. And then all the way on at the last moment, check what they want, and then I could do all the brays ons and make a custom stem, so they still have the right position for them.
Especially with COVID, how are you accomplishing these custom fits? Do you have a form that you use, or do you take measurements from the customer, or do you take measurements from an existing bike?
No, I have a bike fitter I work with. I sell bikes all around Europe and sometimes also in to USA. So basically, I could work with any bike fitter. I always love to work with my own bike fitter, but the system that is created now, it's kind of universal, although every bike fitter has their own idea, of course. So sometimes they force their own idea upon the customer. But I mean, basically, I could work with all bike fittings worldwide. So, but my bike fitter, he's located close to where I'm. He's in a small city next to Amsterdam. And he was taught by Ben Sirota, one of the fathers of bike fitting, I think.
Right. Yeah, we still use a Sirota sizing machine in our shop.
Yep.
That's what we do, bike fitting too. So how long is the wait right now for a custom Lester?
It's around a year or something. Is what it is.
Yeah, takes a while. Do you have pricing on your website?
No.
Smart move.
No. Why is it a smart move? I never thought about
I guess when you think about pricing, it, since it's custom, I mean, you might have a base price, but things change and pricing changes. You know, we're talking about inflation here all the time in the US, and people don't get it. All it is demand is higher, supply is smaller, it costs more money to make it, therefore you're going to pay more money. It's very simple. And it, you know, to put a full price out there and then not be able to meet it, and then come back and have to say later, no, I'm sorry, it's 20% more, that looks much worse than not putting a price at all.
Yeah, true.
So are people ordering mainly electronic stuff, or are they ordering some mechanical stuff? And if they're ordering mechanical, what are you selling them?
Well, so right before COVID started, I already decided to not sell bike parts anymore. I just do frame sets only, because I had so much work at that point that
ordering all the stuff from all the different places, it just got too much for me to handle with
How about
so
wheels?
Much. Yeah, wheels I still build sometimes, mostly for friends. I'm not trying to make a business out of it because it could get really busy.
Yep.
But I love to build wheels. It's a very important part of a good bike. The frame and the wheels are the main factors, I think, where you could change a good or a bad bike.
I agree.
Yeah.
I agree. So what do you do when you aren't building bikes? And you can't say I'm out riding my bike. You have to tell me something different.
No, it's actually, I'm not cycling that much anymore. I have a daughter, 2 years old right now. So most of my time, my free time goes into working on the house. I've just finished redoing my whole house. And I'm really interested in machining more and more. I was taught with like a dull file and a hacksaw and a torch, and we didn't have any machines at the RIE back in the days. And slowly when I started for myself, I started looking for better ways to make the frames. And a couple of frame builders visited my shop. Like one time Chris King was in Amsterdam and he came to visit my shop and he was like, "Where is your mitering equipment?" And I didn't have anything. I didn't even have a lathe. He was like surprised how I was building bikes back then. And they inspired me a bit to make the process more lean. And that's what interests me a lot right now. That's also how I know Jeremy that contacted us through machining. Just sometimes I take small side jobs doing work for grips for film industry. Making like brackets or stuff to hold cameras, or for artists in my building, if somebody is making a sculpture and needs a certain thing turned or milled, I can make it. And I love to work on those old machines.
So interesting. You know, it's like talking to my own husband. He's exactly the same way. You know, he has neighbors who come in and say, "I need this welded," or "I need this brick." Yeah, it's really interesting because you can broaden what you do, and it broadens not only your education, but your interests. It's awesome.
Yeah.
So I have three questions for you that I always ask frame builders. What's your favorite food?
My favorite food is Suriname.
Is what?
Suriname food. It's a old Dutch colony in next to Brazil, but there we have a lot of big Suriname culture here in Amsterdam, and they have their own style food, and it's lovely. I love it. It's like called roti, and it's like a pancake, and you put all kinds of vegetables and meat inside. It's really good.
Okay, that sounds good. Do you listen to music in your shop?
Yes.
What's your favorite music these days?
I listen a lot to country. And do you know Chances with Wolves? It's a radio station from New York.
No.
It plays a lot of obscure folk music. So I listen to all kinds of stuff, all mixed through each other.
And how about pets? Do you have any pets?
Yes, I have a cat.
Hello, Luna. Oh, a Siamese. Is she a Siamese?
No, it's a Persian.
A Persian, well, but with Siamese, oh, it's beautiful. What a lovely, oh, and there it goes upside down. How cute is that?
Yeah, it's an amazing animal.
So the last thing is, of course, let's tell listeners how to find out more. And if somebody comes to Amsterdam, can they come visit your shop?
Yeah, always.
That would be fun.
Send me a message and they'll get a shop tour.
Okay. Let's tell... listeners, your website, and then I'll let you get back to work. I know it's late over there, mid-afternoon.
Yeah. My website is www.lestercycles.com.
Very simple. We'll have it up on our blog this weekend. And I would love to get to Amsterdam to meet you and go through your shop. I know my husband wants to go to Amsterdam. I've been, he hasn't. He would love to come out there. I just don't know what travel's going to be like in the next year. We'll have to see.
Yeah. Well, always welcome.
Well, thank you so much for taking time to talk with me today. And I hope we get to talk again.
Yeah, for sure. It was really nice to meet you.
Take care.
Ciao. Bye-bye.
If you're interested in learning more about Lester Janson and his work, drool over some of his bikes, and catch a glimpse of the interesting surroundings outside his shop, you can log on to www.lestercycles.com. We've also got some interesting photos of his shop interior on our blog, outspokencyclist.com. Let's take a short break, and when we return, we're off to the beautiful Endless Mountain Heritage Area of northeastern PA. You're listening to The Outspoken Cyclist. We are back on The Outspoken Cyclist. I'm Diane Jenks. Yes, it's snowy and cold now, but come spring and summer, you might be looking for a new destination to ride, maybe paddle, hike, camp. Well, the EMHR, Endless Mountain Heritage Region of northeastern PA, covers four counties: Bradford, Sullivan, Susquehanna, and Wyoming, all of which have a rich history with many options for accommodations, restaurants, and of course, outdoor recreation. Hello, Kane and Donna. Welcome to The Outspoken Cyclist. Thanks for being my guest this week. How are you?
Very good. Thank you for having us.
We're great. Excited to be here.
Good. Well, I'd like you to introduce yourselves first. I'm going to begin with you, Kane, because you're the executive director of the Endless Mountain Heritage Region. And let's start with you. Tell us a little bit about your background and the work you do.
Okay. Well, I am a graduate of Lock Haven University. I grew up here in Wyalusing, which is in Bradford County, one of the four counties we serve. But I went to school for communications at Lock Haven and spent 10 years in journalism. I worked in South Jersey and Cape May and Atlantic counties for some newspaper company down there. And after about 4 years, I moved back to my hometown in 2014, and I started working for the local newspaper here called the Rocket Courier. And after a while, I decided it was time for a career change. I was looking forward to doing a little more in the outdoors, doing stuff more for my community rather than just writing about all the tragic things that occur in it. So it was a nice change of pace to come to the EMHR and help out a lot of the organizations that I covered at the newspaper. EMHR does a great deal in outdoor recreation, historic preservation. We do educational programming, agricultural support, multitude of things that we're really proud of. So EMHR was founded in 1998 and is designated by the DCNR as one of the 12 heritage areas across the Commonwealth. And we serve Bradford, Sullivan, Susquehanna, and Wyoming counties. So I've been here a little over 3 years now. I was hired in late 2018.
All right, Donna, you have an amazing background, repertoire of outdoor stuff. Tell us a little bit about yourself.
Sure. I'm a Sullivan County Commissioner. I, like Kane, was born, or I grew up in Wyalusing. I graduated from Wyalusing, Pennsylvania High School. I also was a graduate of Mansfield University, which is in Tioga County. And I was a graduate of Wilkes University. That's where I got my master's. I owned my own business for 16 years, and I had worked for a private company for 16 years. And then I decided to run for commissioner. And so I have been a county commissioner. I'm in my sixth year on my second term. And it's a unique opportunity because we get a chance to help out agencies like Kane's and a bunch of other ones. We have the Endless Mountains Visitors Bureau. I'm on a whole list of different boards, including mental health, drug and alcohol. But outdoor recreation is my passion. It's, as I had kind of told you, I sent that to you so that you would see that I might know a little bit about cycling. And so I've had the opportunity to travel all over the world to cycle, to explore this amazing world that we live in. And what I have here in Sullivan County and the Endless Mountains is top notch. It's equal to some of the great places that I have been to. So I'm excited that we get to showcase what we have to offer in Sullivan County and in the Endless Mountains, because I think we're an untapped recreation spot that people could come and enjoy a week, 2 weeks. We've been able to really see an increase due to COVID of people coming to our state parks, our state forests, to enjoy the beauty of what the outdoors can do for a person, for their mind, their soul, everything, their mental, their physical health. I think it's just a huge opportunity to explore while we keep our environment safe. And that's part of the job too. We want to make sure we keep everything safe. So that's a little bit about me.
Many years ago, my sister and her family lived in the Endless Mountains. And I don't know if people understand where it is, what it is. I remember driving through it once. It's stunning. I was born in PA, haven't lived there in many years. I was born in Philadelphia, which I guess is still technically Pennsylvania. Mm-hmm. So let's tell listeners.
We thought about giving it to Jersey, but we just decided.
That's like, let's not go there. Jersey doesn't want it. And we don't want Jersey, as I remember. So let's tell people, where are the Endless Mountains? What is the heritage area? I know it covers four counties.
Yeah. So Bradford, Sullivan, Susquehanna, and Wyoming are in the northeast corner of the state. We're just east of central PA. I don't know, Donna, are Bradford and Sullivan, they're sometimes even considered central. I mean, we're that close to the line. So,
yeah, and Bradford and Susquehanna both border New York State, but we're in kind of like this rural area in the north central. I always tell people, if you go to the Little League World Series, we're not too far from there.
They consider us Northeast Pennsylvania, NEPA for short. Yeah.
Okay, I want to reintroduce you, and then we're going to get into some of the cool things you can do in the Endless Mountains as cyclists and just for recreation. I'm speaking with Kane Chamberlain. He is the executive director of the Endless Mountain Heritage Region, and Donna Ione, who is a county commissioner and a board member of the EMHR. And they're joining me from their respective, I guess, offices in Pennsylvania. So what are some of the cool features of the Endless Mountains that would beckon cyclists to come and, you know, ride and stay there and, you know, find what's going on in the mountains?
Well, we have, and Donna can definitely attest to this. There's so many different types of cycling anymore. You have gravel cycling, road cycling, mountain biking. I mean, it's all there and it's all here. That's the great part about where we live. It's a very scenic landscapes, rolling hills that make up our Endless Mountains. Like we said before, quite rural, but we have a lot of great, Route 6, which is the largest intercontinental highway in the in North America, runs right through Bradford and Wyoming counties. But we also, have major highways. We also have a ton of dirt roads and gravel roads for the gravel cyclists. And like I said, with our rolling hills, there's plenty of opportunities for mountain biking too. Right now, actually, Donna and a lot of folks from out in Sullivan County, I'm on the committee as well. They're undertaking an outdoor recreation greenways and trails plan that we're actually working to create a mountain biking trail that would go through the Loyal Sauk State Forest. A lot of our region is in the Loyal Sauk District, Sullivan County in particular, because the Loyal Sauk Forest expands quite a vast amount of acreage. So that's probably our biggest draw in terms of outdoor recreation, because it's also home to World's End State Park and Ricketts Glen State Park, the Loyal Sauk Creek. I mean, just so many beautiful places for people to explore. And as Donna was saying, during COVID, we saw an influx of new visitors. Our DCNR foresters, Department of Conservation and Natural Resources, which is kind of our parent agency, they were seeing license plates from states they'd never seen before in those state parks. So COVID has been detrimental to so many aspects of everyone's life, but there were some opportunities that arose out of the pandemic, and outdoor recreation in our rural area is definitely one of them. Being in the Northeast, we have so many major cities around us, you know, Philadelphia, New York City, Baltimore. So a lot of people are getting out of those cities in droves and coming to places like ours to experience outdoor recreation, particularly when we had the lockdowns and things like that.
What kinds of accommodations and amenities are available? I think driving through, I remembered it was pretty desolate in some areas. What about things like bed and breakfasts or restaurants, hotels?
So we have two tourism bureaus. Both of their executive directors serve on our board of directors as well with Donna. And they promote all of our lodging facilities. We have a good number of hotels. We had the Marcellus Shale and natural gas industry come into our area years back. Became a big thing about 2008. And that led to a lot of hotel development in our region, particularly in Bradford and Susquehanna counties. So, you know, those hotels are here. Due to the high amount of visitation and, out in Sullivan County, they have a lot of hunting cabins. Hunting is a huge part of our culture up here, fishing, things like that. So a lot of people started renting out their hunting cabins as Airbnbs. People are doing it with their apartments or, you know, small homes in their backyards, things like that. So Airbnb has become a big thing up here, too. A lot of people come here to recreate. So they saw that opportunity as a way to make some extra income.
How about camping?
We have a lot of campgrounds as well. Yeah, each one of our state parks has camping opportunities. There's a lot of privately owned campgrounds in the area. Sullivan County has quite a few as well. So yeah, that's always a great way to get people to come here and experience the outdoors 24/7.
Diane, can I go back to your question about the what would get a cyclist here? I want to mention that we have some of the most challenging landscapes. So if somebody wants to, it's usually about, for every mile you ride, it's about 100 feet of climbing. So that makes it a challenge for people. There's not a lot of traffic on a lot of the roads. It's overall safe. We have a lot of gravel. There's a lot of areas where people can, you know, go out and feel safe taking their child with them to cycle. So I just think, you know, that's one of the big things we have is we have the challenging terrain, even though, you know, you might think Pennsylvania, but I tell you, I rode over 175,000 feet of climbing last year. And that's mostly all in Sullivan County.
Wow.
It's a challenge of a ride sometimes. So, but it sometimes I just would like a flat ride. But I think if somebody wants to come to a place where they can have a beautiful challenge, great scenery, cool places to stop, you know, they can take a little swim in our creeks and enjoy that. So that's what I just wanted to make sure you were aware of that.
And that's why I wanted Donna to join us on the program, because I'm the hiker paddler and she is cyclist. Although, oh my gosh, I couldn't even begin to imagine the amount of wisdom in Donna's head when it comes to cycling.
Yeah, so that's what e-bikes are for these days. So
right. Yeah.
That'll be my next bike.
It's going to be a lot of our next bikes, right? Tell me a little bit about some of the events that are coming up, because there were some interesting ones.
Quite a few. Well, I think the big project we're working on right now would be our Endless Mountains Gravel Bikepacking Loop. It's a little over 400 miles. And takes folks through all four of our counties. We want to basically use it as kind of an economic driver as well. So we've teamed with Donna. This was kind of her idea that she approached us about making this happen, because as she said, she's been all over the world and has seen a lot of the different states take advantage of this sort of venture in terms of bike packing, week-long, two-week-long excursions, which people, you know, put all their gear right on their bike and ride for miles and miles. Recognizing that we have this sort of landscape, the scenic landscape that we have, and the dirt roads and all that kind of stuff. I mean, it just seemed like the perfect opportunity to, you know, seize this. So Oregon has 12. We had Russ Rocha from Pathless Paddled come out here a couple of years ago and talk to, you know, different chambers of commerce and organizations like ours about these opportunities, and recognizing that Oregon had 12 of these and Pennsylvania didn't even have one. We thought this would be a great opportunity to be the pilot or the pioneer in our state to make this happen. So Philly Bike Expo, I went to in November. And there was a lot of interest in this path that we expect to launch in the spring.
Okay, that was going to be my question. We're going to launch it in the spring. Are any of these going to be guided through the loop, or is it all self-guided stuff?
Self-guided. We want it to be a self-sustaining route because it's using all existing roads. So we want to basically to get people into our downtowns to visit our wineries, breweries, museums, historical societies, all, a lot of the things that the tourism bureaus and EMHR promote. We want them to get them to our state parks and those campgrounds we were talking about. So this route takes them through basically what the Endless Mountains truly encompasses. I mean, it takes them everywhere that we want them to go.
But eventually it could be somebody could take that on as a business to try to be either a porter to help people get back and forth. That's usually a challenge sometimes, but I think it, you know, somebody might take that on as a small business to take cyclists.
Or to pick it up as one of their offered tours. Yeah. Yeah.
Yep.
Like a Vermont bike tour or one of those.
Yep. And all the things we want to do with outdoor recreation, we really are trying to inspire and encourage more outfitter shops and things like that, where people can do the bike rentals and snowshoe rentals. I mean, we have several outfitters that we work with, but they're mostly geared toward the river. EMHR also manages the Upper North Branch of the Susquehanna, which I put in my background there. So we do work with a lot of water trail managers and outfitters for the paddling aspect of it, which is a huge part of what we do. But we really want to see more with cycling and things like that. So it'd be great to see more businesses like that pop up in our region. We have a few, but it would be great to have more.
Don't you have an organized tour too? I thought I saw in your data, what I was looking at online, that you put on an organized bike tour each year. Or did I make that up?
I mean, we have cycling events. So, you know, in Sullivan County, they have the Tour de Chunk. They have the Endless Mountains Gravel Ride. Those are annual events.
Okay. Yeah, that's popular. What I was talking about, some of the organized stuff.
So we were able to, we are going to be one of the locations for Grind Euro, which is an international cycling event. It's being held in Italy, Switzerland, Wales, California, and Sullivan County. So
wow, listen to
we are so excited that we have this opportunity. It's June 10th, 11th, and 12th. And it's just a superb opportunity that kind of fell in our lap. A couple guys reached out to me to see if Sullivan County would be interested. And I was like, hell yeah. Mm-hmm. And when can we get started? We expect to have riders from all over the world come. I've already had people approach me about making sure they can get a spot. They're worried about it being sold out. And I just saw the one in California that they do a random selection of entrants so that only so many people can go.
They have a limit.
Yeah, they have a limit. Yeah. So anyway, we were just worried, hopefully, of getting our minimum of 300 riders is what Grind Euro would like us to do. So
what's going to be offered with the Grind Euro Tour? I mean, is it going to be?
Okay, it's a race. So what happens? So Friday, they're doing a beer ride. So they'll hit three bars and they'll ride about 20 miles and you have three stops at bars. So that makes it kind of fun. This is basically like a big festival for cyclists. And so then on Saturday is the competitive event. They'll have you're timed in four different stages. There's pros and there's amateurs, and you have the different levels of participants. So that's going to be on Saturday. Then they want bands and breweries and wineries and just a whole festival feeling when these people come back from the ride. And then Sunday there's another organized ride for the riders. So it should be a cool event that you know, we get to host it in Sullivan County. So,
and there is entry information on your website?
There will be. It's not official yet. Like everything's official, but it's not live. Like you can't register today.
And what are the dates again?
It's June 10th, 11th, and 12th. It's in Forksville, Pennsylvania. It will be where it's held. There you go, sister. You got me.
It's right there at the Sullivan County Fairgrounds, which is also right next to World's End State Park. If they come for the 3-day event, I guarantee there's going to be people who stay some extra days just to check out the state park and the state forest and things like that. So it's a great opportunity to, you know, showcase what we have here.
camping will be available for the riders at the fairgrounds, and they'll be able to stay at the bed and breakfast, our hotels, our we have a lot of Airbnbs here.
Let's give our listeners information about how to find out about the Heritage Region, and then we'll circle back maybe and as soon as you're live and let people know that they can actually sign up for that ride. I think it sounds like a really fun weekend.
It's supposed to be, and I'm looking forward to it. I think it's, I get to ride and get to showcase my county to people from all over the world. So I'm super excited about having that chance and going on the beer ride, and that would be fun.
Right. Well, my husband is from the Adirondacks, which is another really cool place to ride.
Oh,
and
yeah.
A lot of people, you know, I think it's becoming more popular, but I would say that if you ask 10 people who don't know where the Endless Mountains are, 9 of them will say, I don't know where they are. I've never heard of them. So I'm really excited to be able to showcase them. I'm hoping we can get some tourism going there for you guys. Tell us the website, and then we will reintroduce you and thank you for being with me today.
Grandeur, how are they going to be doing that? That's strictly through their website, right? I mean, we'll be helping promote that.
You'll link to it though, right?
Yeah, exactly.
Yes. So basically what we do at Endless Mountains Heritage Region is we, you know, not only host our own events, we promote any outdoor recreation event in our region. So this will definitely be something we'll have on our Facebook page and website and things like that to get people to, you know, sign up for this. And like Donna said, I mean, it could be sold out in minutes with the interest in it so far. So I think that will be, but our website is emheritage.org. And we do a number of paddling events, hiking events, cycling events. We have 2 big ones other than the Grand Euro event scheduled for this year. We're going to be doing a Susquehanna County Hikes and Bikes series. And we did that in Sullivan County last year. And we finished with a Loyal Sauk State Forest cycling challenge in October. And we plan to take that to Susquehanna County this year. And we're going to be doing a viaduct to viaducts ride, which is going to be a road ride. And it's going to be a full metric century. And that's going to be from the famous Nicholson Viaduct down to, or from the Starucka Viaduct down to the Nicholson Viaduct and back using the Route 92 scenic byway. So that's going to be August 6th with a rain date of August 7th. Registration, we're getting that up as we speak. We're working to finalize some things with that event, getting our PennDOT permits and all that sort of stuff. So, and then in October, on the 15th, we are going to have a day-long ride on the D&H Rail Trail, which was the Delaware and Hudson Rail. And we nominated that as Pennsylvania's Trail of the Year last year. And it did receive that designation, so we were really excited about that. And we just want to kind of carry that momentum into 2022 and keep people using that trail.
We also have, what's really cool for us, we have, there's going to be 4 triathlons. Our triathlons are biking, running, and kayaking.
Yeah.
So you go down the Susquehanna, or there's one that'll be in a lake. But so that's kind of a unique opportunity for people to, instead of swimming, they can kayak.
Right.
So, yeah, it was funny because Wyalusing has done their triathlon for years. And due to its success, a lot of other, you know, towns in our region decided they were going to host triathlons too. So now we're going to have a whole series of them throughout the year. I think the last one is going to be Tawanda, there October 8th. The one in Sayre, Athens, which is up in the northern part of Bradford County, they're going to be in August, I think.
No, September
24th. Yep. 24th, yes. And when is Wyalusing's? They're always...
They're August 20th. And then Lake Cary, which is in Wyoming County, theirs will be September 18th.
Nice.
So, yeah, it's great to see all this stuff coming together. I mean, I like Donna said before, COVID, I think, made people realize what great recreational opportunities we have here and how to really get people involved. So it's, like I said, it's been a real big opportunity that we've really tried to seize on.
Well, I appreciate you taking time to talk with me today. We've been speaking with Kane Chamberlain and Donna Ione from the Endless Mountain Heritage Region. You can go to emheritage.org and see all of this stuff. As I said, my sister lived in the Endless Mountain for a short period of time. They loved it up there. And it sounds just like a beautiful place to get out on your bike and ride. Thank you so much for talking with me.
No problem. Thank you for having me.
Thank you. Thank you, Diane. Have a great day. Bye-bye. Have a great day.
Take care.
Bye-bye. My thanks to Kane Chamberlain and Donna Iannone for joining me on the show this week. For more information on all things EMHR, log on to emheritage.org. My thanks also to Lester Jansen and to you, of course, for tuning in this week. I hope you enjoyed the show. Please remember to check out our blog, outspokencyclist.com, where every episode is accompanied by show notes, photos, and links. And if you don't already, subscribe to the podcast on your favorite app. I hope you have a great week. Stay warm, stay safe, stay well, and remember, there is always time for a ride. Bye-bye.
Thanks for joining us today on The Outspoken Cyclist with Diane Jenks. We welcome your thoughts and contributions on our Facebook page, or visit outspokencyclist.com to leave a comment on any episode. We will be back next week with new guests, topics, conversations, and news from the world of cycling. Subscribe to the show on your favorite podcast app and you'll never miss an episode. The Outspoken Cyclist is a copyrighted production of DBL Promotions with the assistance of WJCU-FM Cleveland, a service of John Carroll University. Thanks again for listening, ride safely, and we'll see you next week.